The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simen Kuf Samach Beis Hilchais Tevila. This simen deals with the laws of immersing in the mikveh, and it's the final simen in the laws of Nida. Let's begin with Sif Aleph. Sif Aleph talks about the mitzvah of going to the mikveh on time. Now, in the times of the Gemara, when they would calculate perfectly the time of Zava and Nidus, and they would know exactly when the first opportunity to go to the mikveh would be, then there's a special mitzvah of removing that tumah, removing that impurity at the proper time. Now, today we don't do those exact calculations because we added days in order that we shouldn't come to any mistakes. But there's still a mitzvah for two reasons. One, because there is a mitzvah of a husband to his wife to give her her marital needs, and one of them is mitzvah's ayna. And because Chazal tell us that when a woman goes to the mikveh, she has a wanting to be close to her husband, so therefore there's a mitzvah for her to go on time and for her to give her what she deserves. And that's number one. And number two is because there's a mitzvah perivrivia of having a family. Now let's see the kitzur inside. In Bala Ba'ir, if the husband is in the same city, mitzvah isha shetitubu bismana. There's a mitzvah for the wife to go to the mikvah on time. Shleilavatul mepirivrivia afilu laila achas, in order that they shouldn't lose an opportunity for perivrivia, being fruitful and multiplying, even one night. Shari matzino bi Yeshua, we find that Yeshua, shenanash al shabitlas Yisrael mepirivrivia, we find that he was punished, that he held back Klal Yisrael from fulfilling the mitzvah perivrivia for one night. And by the way, from here you see the importance of building a mikvah, because obviously if there's not a mikvah that's conveniently located, so people are going to push off going to the mikvah, and they're not going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of perivrivia at its proper time. The isha and a woman, she misacheres militzvol, a woman who purposely pushes off going to the mikvah, kedei latzaris baila, in order to cause pain to her husband, on Shabbat l'mayoid, she is doing something very incorrect, rachman l'tzlan. Let's continue with Sif Beis. Asur litzvol b'yayim ha'shvi ad seitzer kechavim. The kitzur now is dealing with the proper timing for going to the mikvah. Now, technically, a woman could go day 7 during the day. The reason is because the halacha is that when a zava, a person has tumah, this impurity, when it becomes day 7, so they could go to the mikvah any time during the day. But the halacha is that if they should see dam, if she should see blood again, then the tzvila will be retroactively no good. So because of that, even though technically she could go day 7 during the day, they don't want her to go during the day, because the concern is she's going to go to the mikvah, then she'll have relations with her husband during the day, and later in the day she will see dam, and then retroactively the tefillah will be no good, and therefore it will come out that they transgressed an isser. So therefore, we don't want them to go to the mikvah on day 7 until it's actually night. So this is what the Kitzur tells us now. Asura litzvah b'yamashri atesek yichavim. She is prohibited from going to the mikvah on day 7 until after three stars come out, atesek yichavim. Now, atesek yichavim, there's a lot of discussion about when it is exactly, and we know that there's a shita of the Gain who holds that it's an earlier, and then the Rabbeinu Tam holds that it's later. And in most communities, they're concerned about both, so therefore, basically, they look at the period of time from Shkia, from sunset, till Tseis, till when three stars come out, that whole entire time, they look at as a in-between time, a no-man's land, that Ben Hashmashas, and therefore, if a woman wants to go to the mikvah when it's already night, she would have to wait until that's over. And there's a big discussion as well as to how to calculate that exactly. According to many paiskim, it has to do with where you are in the world. So, say, in Europe, it could take 72 minutes or even longer from the time that the sun sets until three stars come out. Whereas, say, Yerushalayim, 40 minutes after Shkia, after sunset, it'll already be very dark. It's well known that in America, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal held that the main Zman is approximately 50 minutes after Shkia. And many mikvahs, that's what they go with, that women usually go to the mikvah, actually immerse, meaning the preparations they could do earlier, obviously, but the actual immersion is usually done around 50 minutes after Shkia. And even if they want to go to the mikvah close to dark, and even though she's not going to get home until it's dark, so this whole concern that a woman would have relations with her husband and it would, and then afterwards she would see blood and retroactively the tefillah would be no good, is not a real question, because she's not going to get home early enough that something like that could possibly happen. Nami Elser, it's still a problem, and the reason is because they wanted it to be across the board a certain way, that you shouldn't go to the mikveh until it's nighttime, and that's generally the practice that we follow. Vafilonis Achra, and even if she doesn't go to the mikveh the night following day 7, as she could have gone, but tevelas acharkach, so now she goes on day 8, asura gam kein litpo b'yayim, she still shouldn't go during the day. Now, the reason for this is known in the Gemara as Srach Bita. Srach Bita means that a daughter is usually very close to the mother, and therefore she's sort of aware of the mother's whereabouts. So what's going to happen is that the daughter is going to remember that my mother went to the mikveh during the day. And what the daughter didn't know was that the mother went to the mikveh on the 8th day during the day. And the daughter is going to think that it was the 7th day during the day. So because many times daughters learn from their mothers, so therefore the Gemara made a safeguard and said that a woman should never go to the mikveh during the day under normal circumstances, because the daughter is going to pick that up and she's not going to understand that that's only possible to do on day 8 and not day 7, because on day 7 we run this risk of it retroactively nullifying the tevilah, the going to the mikveh, whereas on day 8 you don't have this problem. So the practical halacha is that one should not go to the mikveh during the day, whether it's day 7 or even day 8, and day 8 is again because of Srach Bita, because the daughter is going to make a mistake in understanding what's going on. And continues, v'gam b'inyan zeh, and even if she is going on day 8, so really, you should be able to be more lenient as far as actual time. Yesh l'hachmer, one should still try to be stringent, shalai titul apilu samcha sheicha, that she shouldn't go even close to sunset, it should actually be dark, but she'll like tova levesa ashatachshach, even though she won't get home until it's dark, but she should go when it's already night, which according to what we're saying would be around 50 minutes after Shkia here in the United States. Now, this is all true about a married woman, but about a kala, about a bride, so she's not married yet, so she's obviously not going to have relations, so therefore we don't really have a concern that she's going to have relations and then she's going to see blood afterwards, and it's retroactively going to nullify the going to the mikveh. So says the Kitzer, Yichayla is litzul b'yamashmini. Then she could go on the 8th day during the day, because again, she's not married, so she doesn't have the issue of this retroactively making the tefillah a problem, and it's also on day 8. And I guess a kala is not a common process, a common thing, and also it's something that she in her first marriage, at least, she's not going to have a daughter, so therefore they weren't concerned about her going during the day. So she could go, yichayla is litvul b'yayim ashmini, so she could go on the 8th day during the day, or achar kach b'yayim, or a different day, say the 9th day, the 10th day during the day, or b'shasat chak. And in a difficult situation, right, let's say the mikveh is very booked, so she's not going to be able to get an appointment on day 8 during the day. Afilu im tovelas b'yamashvi, even to go on the 7th day during the day, yechela gamkin litzvul b'yayim, she could still go on during the day. So the Kiddush Shulchan Aruch, although with a married woman, he's not giving much leeway, but with a woman who's not married, with a kala, with a bride, he's giving a lot of leeway that if push comes to shove, she could really go on day 7 during the day, because again, since she's not married, there's no concern that there's going to be relations, and then it'll retroactively nullify the tevilah if she ends up seeing blood. lachar netzachama, and even she could go in the morning as long as it's after sunrise. But the Ketzer says of Allah yamidu asachob ba'atzeh segechavim, but they should not perform the marriage ceremony until after sunset, and not only sunset, but three stars come out. And the reason is obvious, because it's still the eighth day, it's still the seventh day, and so you want to have that day to completely pass before she gets married and has a husband. But if she goes to the mikveh after the chuppah, even though she never consummated her marriage yet, so therefore you could say, well, it's not like a regular married woman. Once she's already married and she has a husband, so her halacha is like any other woman, that she should not go during the day. Now, in the next sif, the Kitzer is going to say certain extenuating circumstances that there is a possibility of going to the mikvah during the day. Siv Gimel. Heicha de'ika oinis. In a situation where there is an oinis, extenuating circumstances, k'gayin shireya litvo b'layla, machmas tzino epachad. Let's say she's afraid to go at night because it's very cold, or another fear, right? Let's say the mikvah is in a bad neighborhood. There have been such questions brought up. Or maybe the Beis HaTefillah is very far away. And this is in the old days. We had the gates of the city will close at night, or for many generations in Europe, where Jewish people were in ghettos, where they would have to be in the ghetto at a certain time, all these types of situations. So then she could go on the eighth day during the day. Now the reason is because the eighth day doesn't really run the same risks as the seventh day, because the seventh day we have this problem of retroactively nullifying the tevila if she should see blood, which you don't have on the eighth day. But generally we don't do it because the daughter will learn from the mother, as we mentioned. But over here they were lenient. Aval b'shvi, but on the seventh day, l'tzitzel b'yoyim, she should not go during the day. Afilu b'makom oynis, even in such circumstances. Now, there are opinions that entertain the possibility of going on day seven during the day. Many disagree. Many hold that it's not an option. But if you look in the Sefer Sha'ar Mitzvah Ba'alacha, a very important work on the Kitzer, he brings the opinions that do feel in certain circumstances it's permitted. And obviously this is something that needs rabbinic guidance. And this, that it's permitted to go to the mikveh when there's extenuating circumstances on the eighth day during the day. So he says that if you're already being lenient and you're going on the eighth day during the day, which you really generally don't do, so you have to make sure not to cut too many corners. The chafifa, the preparation for the mikveh, should definitely be close to going to the mikveh. Although one could technically say, listen, I prepared on the seventh day, let's say, to go to the mikveh, and it's within a couple days, so therefore, just like when a woman prepares on Friday for a 3-day yantif, she could still go a day or two later. Says the Kitzer over here, she should not rely on that. Now the reason is because once they already gave the leniency of going on the eighth day, they don't want you to do a double leniency and also let the chafifa, let the preparations be so far behind. But if the eighth day is Shabbos or Yontif, so she couldn't do the preparations on that day, that she would have to do them on Erev Yontif or Shabbos. And now she wants to cut two corners, so to speak. She wants to do two leniencies. She wants to have the chafifa early and go during the day. This is not permitted. Because this is sort of a general concept that two leniencies together we don't do. Tahayot tevila b'yayim, which means going to the mikveh during the day. V'gamar chakas chafifa mitvila, and also distancing the preparations from the actual tevila, which is not considered to be such a good thing to do. The Kitzer continues with some halachas pertaining to the actual tevila, to the actual immersion in the mikveh. Lo samoid al shum dover b'shas tevila. She shouldn't stand on anything when she is being tevil. Now the reason is because when a woman goes into the mikveh, we want her to be relaxed, and we want her body to be in its natural state in order that the water could get everywhere it normally gets to. If a woman's going to be nervous and uptight, then the water might not get to the normal places because she's going to sort of, clench her fists and her muscles, and it's not going to get to the normal places. So we want it to be comfortable, so she should not stand on something where she's afraid she might fall and immerse herself. Now what happens if the mikvah is very deep? So she has to stand on the ladder that goes into mikvah. Tasa shilas chacham, so says the kitzur, she should ask a competent rabbi because it is questionable if she should do this. Now really, if she makes sure to go to the mikvah properly, it shouldn't be a problem, her tevila, but as a safeguard, we generally don't do it, so therefore the kitzur is saying one should ask before doing it, and if it's an extenuating circumstances and she's careful to do it in the proper way, it could be that it would be permitted. But again, it needs guidance. Sifhei. So Sifhei continues on the same theme of not going to the mikveh in a situation where she's not going to be relaxed. She shouldn't go to the mikveh in a place where she's afraid that people could see her. Why? Because she's trying to get into the mikveh and she's trying to do it quickly so people shouldn't see. Right? Let's say she goes to a beach or something like that. So she's not going to be relaxed. She's going to do the tefillah quickly. She's not going to do it properly. But if after the fact she did go, and we know for sure that she did do it properly, she was careful, she immersed her head, her whole body, she made sure all her hairs, nothing came out, also the tefillah, then the tefillah is kosher, it just shouldn't be done to begin with in such a way. Let's continue with Sif Vav. Kishahi Tevelos. When a woman goes into the mikvah, so we have to make sure that her entire body is submerged. Now, it's very common that a woman's hairs stick up, they float up, and therefore, if one of them are out of the mikvah, then it comes out that her whole entire body is not in the mikvah, and it's not a proper immersion. And because she has a cheskas tumma, she has, so the assumption is that she is tameh, she's impure, until we can know for sure otherwise, we have to make sure that we know that the tefillah was good. So therefore, tzrich lamed etzla isha yehudis, so therefore, a Jewish woman, gedayla, who's a gedayla, meaning who's a mature woman, yoysa mishnei esrei shana, so above bas mitzvah, v'yamechad, above 12 years in one day, shetira shala yishar miser reisha, tzof al pnei amayim, so she should make sure that none of the hair is floating above the water. V'mein la isha, but what if there's no person available? Yechela gam baila lamed etzla, Liroi Shetitva Yafe says the Kitzer, this is based on a tshuva from the Nabi Huda, that the husband could make sure she gets immersed properly. Now there's obviously a novelty in this, because the husband, during the time when a woman's anida, he's not supposed to see his wife undressed. And how is he allowed to see her going into the mikvah if she is at that point anida? The answer that Nabi Huda says is, since right after the tevila she'll be permitted, so therefore we're not concerned that maybe something not good is going to happen. This is what he says. Now, it is brought another eitzah, another way of dealing with this would be that if she would sort of hold down her hairs when she goes into the mikvah, so she would know for sure that they all went underneath, and that it may also work. But the kitzur, for whatever reason, doesn't bring that, and says you need someone actually standing there, either another woman or her husband. Probably the reason is because he wasn't comfortable writing it, because people could take it too lightly. And again, if some hairs do float up, then it's a serious problem. Sif Zion. Mutaris Lutbol Belil Shabbos. Now, there's a discussion in the Paiskim about going to the mikvah on Shabbos in general, because of we're not allowed to warm water or wash ourselves on Shabbos. Now, the Kitzur says she's allowed to go on Leil Shabbos im ata higiyas mantivilos. If now it came her first opportunity to become tahar, to become pure, so she would be allowed to go. Because since it's a Devar Mitzvah, it's a reason for a mitzvah, then she would be allowed to go. Shalo yachval lutzval mikaidim ubala beir. So her husband's in the city and she couldn't have gone earlier, so she's allowed to go. Well, ain bala beir, but if her husband's not at home, so really there's no practical implication of the tefillah. or she had the opportunity to go before, and whatever reason she didn't do it, Asrula Tulbalel Shabbos. She's not supposed to go on Friday night, because since there are issues with going to the mikvah on Shabbos in general, and she had the opportunity to go before, so it's not considered such an emergency that it should be done on Shabbos. Now, there are opinions that hold that in any case, she's allowed to go on Shabbos, and that is the more prevalent custom. That generally, if a woman didn't have the opportunity to go, say, the night before, even if she could have gone, but she didn't go, she would still be allowed to go on Friday night. Now, it's interesting also, because one of the big discussions between the Hasidim and non-Hasidim has to do with going to the mikvah on Shabbos, because the Hasidim took on very much going to the mikvah even on Shabbos, and there are those that are opposed to it because of this problem. And the basic concept is that since it's for a mitzvah, so they could go. So some write that also that those that accept that ruling in general, that they go to the mikvah on Shabbos, then definitely a woman could go to the mikvah on Shabbos even if she had the opportunity to do it beforehand. Let's continue in the Kitzur. V'im hi achar leida. Now, if she's after a birth, yesh chilukei dinim in mitaris litzvah b'lel Shabbos alay. So again, there's discussion whether or not she could go on Friday night. And the question is, again, because it's not like this was her first opportunity to go, so therefore, perhaps she shouldn't go on Friday night. V'tasa shilas chacham, she should ask a question. And as I mentioned, the prevalent custom is to go whenever the opportunity comes, even if it is Friday night. V'isha shezman tfilosa b'kaidim. Now, if a woman could have gone before, but she didn't go because her husband wasn't in the city, so there's really no point in it. But Be'er Shabbos, and all of a sudden, he shows up Friday. So there are places that not only do they follow the Kitzur's stringent opinion that they don't go to the mikvah if she had the opportunity to go before, but even in this situation where she sort of had the opportunity, but there was just no reason for her to go, and now all of a sudden there's a reason, even then they're stringent. So the Kitzur says, "Bamakam she'ein mina kavua," it says if you don't have a strong custom not to go, then ain lahachma, that already the Kitzur would agree that you would be allowed to go on Friday night. Now, he says in the places that are stringent, they don't go Friday night, so he goes even further and says on Saturday night, on Ma'aseh Shabbos, she shouldn't be tayla, go to the mikvah. Now, the reason is because in those days, they didn't have electric lighting, and they were afraid that they were going to rush, and they wouldn't do it carefully, because they don't have such good lighting. Now today, because we have electric lighting, and she could, as long as she takes her time, there really is not such a concern. I don't even know if the Kitzur would be stringent. But again, the prevalent custom is to go across the board, and if she didn't have a chance to prepare from before Shabbos, then she could prepare on Maitzei Shabbos, but she should take her time, and she should use good lighting. V'amana Shenisis. Now, what about a widow that got married? Asura litvul tefillah harishayna b'lel Shabbos. She should not go to the mikvah for the first time Friday night. Da'asra lava Allah bi rishayna b'Shabbos. So, there's a little background that's needed over here, which is there are opinions that hold that namana, a widow, a chuppah alone, does not create marriage. As we know, at a wedding, they stand under the chuppah together, and that creates a nesuin, it creates a marriage. There are opinions that hold that when it comes to an almana, a widow, you need actual yichud. Now, in those days, not everyone necessarily did yichud, especially if she was a nida, if she was richly impure. So for an almana, she could be technically not, the marriage could technically not be complete. So therefore, the custom was not to consummate the marriage on Shabbos when it came to a widow. This is the opinion that the Kitzur is following. To also love Allah, be rishon b'Shabbos, because you're not allowed to consummate the marriage of a widow on Shabbos. And the reason for it is because since, according to those opinions, the marriage is not complete until there is intimacy, because that's like instead of the chuppah, So therefore, on Shabbos, that's when she, so to speak, completely becomes his wife. And he's like, it's like a transaction. It's like solidifying the marriage. So therefore, the Kitzur says that there's a custom for her not to go on Leil Shabbos. Again, if this was the first time. Moitzei Shabbos, Yesh Makinah Shetitvel, and Moitzei Shabbos are those that are lenient. And again, as I mentioned, Moitzei Shabbos today with electric lights should not be a problem. Sif Ches. Sif Ches talks about actually going into the mikvah and the bracha, the blessing that's made on the tevila. La'acha shetav la'karoi. After she immerses herself properly, ba'oida ha'imedes b'sechavayim, when she's still standing in the water, tevarech asher kedishonu b'mitzvoy sevitzivon al tevila, that you sanctified us with your mitzvahs and you commanded us on the tevila. Now, it's interesting that the Kitzur says to make the bracha after the immersion, and the Shulchan Aruch writes that the bracha should be made before the immersion, just like with most mitzvahs, we make a bracha on the mitzvah before we do the mitzvah. Now, the Ramah, who brings this prevalent custom, which is to immerse once, and then to make the bracha, and then the custom is to immerse again afterwards. Now, what's the reason why they make the bracha after the immersion? So it's a fascinating reason. The Taz explains, because when a convert, when a ger, immerses in the mikvah, they can't make the bracha beforehand, because beforehand they're not Jewish. They only make the bracha afterwards. So because in certain situations the bracha on a tevila is made afterwards, the Chachamah made a general rule, made it simple, that in all cases we make the bracha afterwards. But I believe the prevalent custom is that the woman goes into the mikvah, immerses herself once, then makes the bracha, then immerses herself again. V'yesh lahachmir, one should be stringent, shekoydim habracha techas es asma lamata b'ezim etzbachas, that she should cover herself below with something, o lechalapachas techabigz reise al gufa, that she should hold her arms around herself, lahafsik, to make a separation between her heart and the uncovered parts of her body. And she also shouldn't look into the water when she's making the bracha, because again, a person is not supposed to make a bracha in front of the uncovered parts of their body. Now, in those days when they were in a place that there was sand on the bottom, so she could sort of kick the water a little bit and the floor a little bit, and it'll sort of make things cloudy. It's good to do it before the bracha. Let's continue. Yesh nagos, there is a custom. Shel achar bracha tov leis od pam achas, as I mentioned, that after the bracha, so they immerse once, they make the bracha, and they immerse an extra time. Minug nachon hu, and it's proper custom, because then you have both strong points. You have the tefillah first, and then the bracha, and then you have the bracha, and then the tefillah. Rakshat hashkiach, shegam atfila ashniya, that the second immersion, tiyakahagin, should also be done properly. Sif tes. La'achar shetov lo b'mikvah karoi. After she immerses herself properly, mutaris likonis lebeis hamerchas l'cham mesasma. She could go into the bathhouse to warm herself up. Va'afilu himerchas shalzeh, even if it's a sauna. But to take a bath again, yesh oishim, some say it should not be done, v'cheinu, and this is the custom. The background behind what the Kitzur is referring here is something very interesting, which is in the times of Chazal, there was a problem that there were mikvahs, that they were places where people would immerse themselves that were very unclean, and they would need to go into them because they had rainwater, and that's what was kosher for a tefillah. But right afterwards, people would wash themselves off. Now, what ended up coming out was people started thinking that the second washing was the washing that made you tahar, made you pure, not the actual going into the mikvah. That obviously is a serious problem if people are going to start thinking that any water could make you tar, not mikvah water. So because of that, the Chacham instituted that if a person goes to the mikvah and then afterwards they pour water on themselves, then it makes it that they have to go to the mikvah again. Now, according to many sources, that this was never said when it comes to Anita in today's times, making herself ritually pure for her husband. It's talking about in the times of the Gemara when they were careful about being ritually pure for everything. But the custom is to be concerned about this. Now, I'll explain in a minute the limitations of this concept. But the idea that the kids are saying is that she's allowed to go into the bathhouse, and we don't see that the very fact that she's going in is going to be a problem, because she's just going in there to warm herself. Now, some are of the opinion that this whole problem is only when she would take another bath or a shower in the same building as the mikveh. Just like in the times of Chazal, the problem was that they would immerse themselves, and then right afterwards they would pour water on themselves. But let's say she goes to the mikveh, and she doesn't feel comfortable afterwards, and she wants to go home and take a shower. So according to some opinions, this is not even a problem of the custom. I've heard in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal that he said another interesting point, that once the tevila, once the immersion is used, meaning to say that, say, the couple has relations, obviously she's allowed to take a shower. No, the problem is that if before the tevila is used, she goes and bathes herself again, then there's room that people should make a mistake and think that the second bathing was the real thing, not the actual going to the mikveh. So Rav Moshe says that if a couple has relations, then she definitely doesn't have this problem. Now, he also says, based on this logic, that in a situation where, let's say, she really wants to take a shower or something, if the couple, let's say, embraces or does something that would be prohibited when she's in Anita, so by doing that, they're showing that the tefillah has already been used, so therefore, no, they're not going to make the mistake in thinking that the shower afterwards is what's making her tahar, making her ritually pure. So therefore, if they did something like that, even just embracing, and she has a real need to take a shower or something, then she would be allowed to do that as well. There is another interesting discussion whether or not when men go to the mikveh, there's such a concept. And the custom was really only said with women. But today, when men go to the mikveh, which is not as serious at all as when women go to the mikveh, it's more just an added inyan of kedusha. So many hold that it's not an issue at all. But in those days, she would go to a cold mikveh, so she'd be really cold. So the kitzur says she could pour some warm water on herself to warm her body. You could be lenient. But in a place where the custom is to prohibit that, one should not be lenient. Sif Yud. Yesh le'isha liyos senua b'tvilasa. It's proper for a woman to be modest in with her tvila, lahaster l'tvilasa, that others don't need to know about it, and she should have privacy. And that's why mikvois try to be careful that they're in places that other people shouldn't see, and to respect the privacy of the women doing the mitzvah. V'leiselech b'fnei abriyes. She shouldn't go in front of people, that people don't need to realize that she's going to the mikveh. Misha ena isekain, and a person who doesn't do that, nemar aleh, it said about it, or sheikh im kol behema, cursed is the one who lays with an animal, and it's a strong analogy, but I think the idea is that in today's days, because tevila is only really done for a husband and wife between themselves, so therefore publicizing it is an important lack of modesty. Oyesh lizar, says the Kitzer, there are other more you could call them almost superstitious type of ideas, that obviously have a basis from Chazal, but they're not things that we can understand them. When she leaves the mikveh, that she should meet up with another Jewish woman, and that's why the custom is that the mikveh woman actually touches her. She shouldn't meet up with something that's impure, like a dog or a donkey, a chazir or a pig, a sus or a horse, a metzaira, or a person who has leprosy. Oyam Aratz Einachri V'im Pogu Ba Tvarim Elu. And if she does meet up with this, Im Yiras Shemayim, if she's God-fearing, Tachsa V'titzbo. Now, there is a general discussion with a lot of these types of things that we find in the Gemara, that it seems that in times of these Gemara, these supernatural powers are very strong. Today, we don't see them as much, and there's a lot of interesting explanations for that. Rav Yankov Kamenetsky gave an explanation that in the times of Chazal, the strength of Kedusha was stronger. You had Nevuah, you had prophecy, and therefore, there were other spiritual strengths sort of to counterbalance that, which sort of as the generations of Kedusha got weaker, they got weaker as well. So there is a discussion in today's days in general with these types of things, you know, does it how stringent it is or not. But again, the custom is that the mikveh woman will touch the person who goes into the mikveh afterwards, so to avoid any of these issues. Misha pagab isha shiyotze min atvila. A person who meets up with a woman who just came out of the mikvah, ikala mechash chasashon l'takala. Again, there's some sort of superstition about that. Vatakonahi, and the what should be done is shemar shtei pesukim elu, that you should say these two verses: shefech buz al nedivim vis ambesayu b'loy darach, shefech buz al nedivim umadiach afikim ripa. Now, it is interesting that the Kitzer brought these here. You know, apparently in his times people were careful about this. There is also a discussion about some of these things, that if people aren't careful about them, so it doesn't affect them. In other words, many things, if people are careful about them, so then if you don't do them, then it's considered to be some sort of problem. But if people aren't careful about them, then we say sort of Hashem guards them and they're not an issue. Let's continue with Sif Yud Aleph. There's a discussion whether or not the mikvah should be warmed. Now, the reason is because people might think it's just a bath, and we want them to realize this is something special, this is a mikvah. Now, ukvarna spashed a minig, and it became very prevalent, Bari Makarmus Laheter, to be lenient, and today especially, you know, we want to encourage women to go to the mikvah as much as possible, and we want to make them feel comfortable, and therefore all the mikvahs today, they have heating systems to make it comfortable. But he says, if there's no such custom in Lahakal, and again, as I mentioned to you, the overwhelming custom is to have heating systems in mikvahs. For Makam Shenagim Lahakal, in those places that they do have heating in the mikvah, Shichim Lashkir, Shabalil Shabbos, Keshetavlim, when on Friday night, when they go to the mikvah, Layu Amayim Chamim Amish, it shouldn't be so hot, El Apayshim, sort of lukewarm. Sif Yud Beis. B'inyan Atvila B'Naharas. Now, the Kitzer mentions over here something that is sort of, he's getting us involved in the laws of mikvahs, and he's not giving us so much background. The laws of mikvahs are very complex, but I'll just give a few basic pointers. The water that's used in the mikvah is supposed to be either from a spring or from rainwater. Now, there's a very important difference between a spring and rainwater. A spring, even if it's moving, a person would be allowed to immerse themselves in the spring, and it would be considered a mikvah. However, when you're using rainwater, which most of our mikvahs today are built with, so the halacha is that it has to be oimdim, it has to be standing in one place. So therefore, if you have a mikvah, we have to make sure that there's no cracks in the walls, and therefore the water is staying in one place. That's also would be a problem. Let's say you have a river, that the river is all made of rainwater, and the river is moving, that's going to be a problem. If the river is made out of spring water, then it's fine, that the fact that it's moving. That's one important halacha, and the Kitzer over here is going to talk more about it, but I just want to quickly mention a few other halachas. There's another halacha that that you need 40 sa'a of water for a mikvah, and 40 sa'a is basically the amount of water that it would take one person to immerse themselves in. You know, the average person, based on the average height of a person and the average width, that's how they calculate it. Now, this water is not allowed to be in a vessel, in a kli. It has to be in the ground. Even a kli that's fastened to the ground is not necessarily good. But that's why usually it's done in concrete that's attached to the ground. And then it can be tiled. Now, another halacha is, as we mentioned, it shouldn't be moving the water. It should be in one place. Now, another thing is that it shouldn't be drawn water. Now, there's a big discussion about the water from reservoirs that we get in our tap, if that's called drawn water. And generally, we assume that it is drawn water. And because of that problem, we need to have mikvahs that they collect the rainwater, usually from the roof of the mikvah, and there's an intricate system how they get the water into a bar, into a cistern, without being considered that it's been drawn. Now, the problem is that the rainwater, you can't always fill it with rainwater, and the rainwater is not very clean. So the people want the actual mikvah that you immerse yourself in, you want it to be clean water. So there's a concept that if the city water that's not good for the mikvah is connected, is touching the a cistern of rainwater, then it makes it kosher as a mikvah. And that's called hashaka. Hashaka literally means kissing. It means touching. And most of the mikvahs today have, that's the system that they use, that they have a cistern of rainwater that they fill every so often, and that stays there, and then they fill the pool where people actually go into with city water, and that touches the other pool, and that thereby making it kosher. Another way of making it kosher, which many mikvahs employ both ways as an astringency, would be that the city water, when it flows into the pool where people actually go into, it flows over the cistern of rainwater. And by doing that, it sort of connects to that cistern of rainwater, and it gets the status of rainwater, and then as it flows into the pool where people go into, it has the status of rainwater, even though it's clean city water. And again, in most mikvahs today, they have both, and as the water comes in, it goes over the cistern, and then once it's in the pool, it's still connected to a cistern of rainwater, and thereby you get both the strong points. The mikvah water should also be clean. If other liquids are obviously not good, and these are just a few of the basic concepts in mikvahs. Now let's continue with what the Kitzur tells us that's important to know. But you're not tevila ben naris. So what about going to the mikvah in a river? According to many great poskim, ain't not tevila elas ben naris. It doesn't work. It's not good. Only if the river is so small, that it didn't become bigger because of rainwater or the melting snow. So basically, again, the problem is that because a river is moving, therefore, we need it to be spring water, not rainwater. And obviously, rivers surge and become big because of rainwater. So therefore, if there's a mixture of rainwater and spring water, that's not going to be good. We need a river, let's say maybe in the middle of the summer, that's very small, and we could assume that it's spring water, then that would be okay. Even if there's maybe a little bit of rainwater, but if the vast majority is going to be spring water. Because rainwater and snow, and melting snow, are good, but only if they're in one place. So if you have a stagnant pool of water with rainwater, that's great. But because it's not standing, it's stagnant, it's moving, so it's a problem. When they're moving, it doesn't work. Only spring water purifies when it's moving. Now, what if it's a difficult situation, but there is no regular mikvah available? The custom is to be lenient and to rely on those that are of the opinion. This really who the command of Omar, the filu raim shanar misgalim minag sham. Even though we see that the river definitely got bigger because of rainwater, if we have a river, the primary source of the river is a spring, even though in the months where there's a lot of rainwater, it'll get bigger. it's still considered to be a spring because the primary source is spring water. Ki be'ez ha'gsham ha'aver meluchlach u'mekar ha'mayneis mishrabim u'sgabrim, and because since during the rainy season the springs have more water, and if we can establish that the majority of the water in the river is from a spring, and the rainwater will become nullified in the majority of spring water. So again, the Kitzer is saying, and this was a prevalent problem in his time, and that was that people use rivers to be tovelin, and basically what the practice was that if the river is only from spring water, then you could definitely use it, even though it's moving. If it's partially spring and partially rainwater, then it's questionable, but there was a custom to be lenient. But says the kids have a makom sheish mikvah, but if there's a regular kosher mikvah, chalil lahakel, heaven forbid to be lenient. Now, obviously, it's very hard to ascertain these things, and that's why it's always recommended today to use a mikvah that's certified and that's under a competent Orthodox rabbi, and that they make sure that everything's done properly. And otherwise, you don't really know what you're getting yourself involved with, and we're dealing with a very serious Isser of Nida, and therefore people should be careful. V'gama makam she'ein mikvah, in the place where there is no mikvah, in be'epshari yesh lahachmer, if it's possible to be stringent, one should be stringent. She'ma normas nisrabi megishamim, that if let's say it just rained and the river got very big, tamtin v'tilos v'shnayim v'shlasha yamim, if you could wait a couple days, at yoshav le'sano, until the river will calm down and get smaller, then it'll be much better to wait, because then it'll be good according to all opinions. But type in be'efshari, and it's good if possible, shalai titbol b'makam shenis rachev, that she should try to find a place in the river that doesn't look like it was affected so much by the rain, el b'makam shalach tamidi, but a place that it goes the regular way, tebezei yesh k'tzas l'achol tzvei, because that would be an added reason to be lenient. Let's continue with Sif Yud Gimel. Uvenar shemis hafel agamri aldeg sham, a river that completely comes because of rainwater, ulufam misyabish, and sometimes it dries up because there's no rain, afal pi shevashasak sham gam shar nahara shev chalasaychai, even though during the rainy season it gets inlets from other rivers that do have spring water, because sometimes this river stops completely, there is absolutely no reason that one is allowed to go in it when it's moving, until it goes into one pool. And the reason is because since the basis of the river is completely rainwater, so even if it may have a little bit of spring water mixed in, it makes no difference, and it's not a good mikvah at all. The question is only if the base of the river is spring water, and then it has, in addition to it, it has rainwater. That's when the discussion is that the Kitzer had is about. But if the primary source is rainwater, then it definitely is not good. And now let's see Sif Yudal, the final sif. Then he had mikvah rabim him oid. The laws of mikvahs are very long and complex. And any time people make a mikvah, ein la soisa ki im agdi rab mumchal rabim gadol b'tayr v'yira, it should only be done by a person who's considered to be a very expert rabbi, who's known great in Torah and God fearing. And today, in most communities, when they make a mikvah, usually the local rabbi doesn't make it himself, because again, he may be a wonderful rabbi, but he doesn't have the expertise to build a mikvah, and usually they bring in someone who's an expert in it. And also, one has to be very vigilant about the mikvah to see if even a small change happens. They should right away contact someone. That's why mikvahs today, they usually have a rav who oversees the mikvah, and there's a woman in charge of the mikvah. They're also educated to know what the possible problems could be to make sure that it remains at a very high level of kashas. And also when they have to clean the mikvah and refill it, it obviously has all sorts of complications. Yishalo echisnagu, so they obviously should get guidance how to do it. And again, the bottom line is when it comes to the laws of mikvahs, that one should go to a mikvah that has competent supervision and upkeep.